Hi, I'm Brittany Ashley, your host of Breaking Norms, Building Dreams, your guide through this transformative journey in both business and life. This is your place crafted for dreamers, doers, or anyone who has been told they can't. Get ready as we challenge those narratives together. You're tuning in live to the United Public Radio Network, airing on 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. We are streaming on all the popular platforms every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join me for a candid and thought-provoking conversation celebrating your unique journey because you are worth it. Hello, everyone. I'm so excited to be here with Linda today. We're on Breaking Norms, Building Dreams, and I'm your host, Brittany Ashley, and we are broadcasting live on the United Public Radio Network and UFO Paranormal Radio Network, 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. Get ready to escape the next hour as we break norms and build dreams today with Linda. I'm so excited to have you.
Excited to be here. Thank you.
I'm so excited. We'll dig in more on kind of like the backstory of how we a little bit know each other.
Yes.
I'm like,
yes.
I was like telling somebody, I was like, I'm so excited for Linda. I've known her for so long.
I'm super pumped to chat.
I'm so excited. Let's just do a quick bio for all the listeners. So Linda is one of Canada's top 25 most influential women in 2023. Congratulations, by the way, because I've seen that. Linda has championed underdogs and dreamers. She has immigrated as a child from Mexico with her mother, laid the foundations for her career built on hard work, hope, and desire for equitable. See, I told you I was going to.
It's a tongue twister. Equitable. Yeah, I get it.
Her dedication, inclusivity, and equality is the hallmark of Linda's career and talent. I'm so excited for you to tell more because I've been watching your journey since we've known each other in the tech industry. And like, I was trying to narrow that down, how many years it's been, but I feel like it's, I know at least been 20, 15.
I was going to say, take whatever you think it is and then double it. Cause that's typically how it works. Right. But yeah, I think it's been probably at least that.
Right. I feel like at least,
yeah.
Cause at least that, at least 15 plus years. So we've worked together in the tech industry, but I'm just like so excited to have you here because I definitely looked up to you as somebody coming out of university, trying to like start my own career of not knowing where I wanted to be in life, being like the new, like the world's the oyster.
I remember that. I remember that feeling. I understand. I completely get it.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you talk to the listeners about your journey because it's been an amazing journey that I've seen and kind of dig in a little bit more on Joni, where you're working now as a co-founder and so much more. So maybe let's dig in on your background a bit more and while I type to everybody else to put in their questions because they might have questions for us.
Yeah, I mean, my background, I like to say I took the long scenic route through my education. I didn't really know what I wanted to do post high school. So I kind of jumped into, I actually wanted to be a marine biologist. That didn't pan out. So I went into business and I went into tech. And so I became a backend web developer for a few years, realized very quickly I am not meant to sit in front of the computer typing away at code. And I like the business of tech more than the tech itself. So I kind of migrated to different companies like KPMG, WestJet, learned a ton, and then started moving into startups. Mm-hmm. And because of my background in tech and my passion for business, I was able to kind of bridge the two.
Yes.
And then I kind of got burnt out and I was like, where are all the women? Where are all these female, amazing female leaders? Why am I just surrounded by men at boardrooms, like in board meetings. And so I started a consultancy where I started working for female founders. And through that, I met a lot of people who I call friends today and learned about, the startup world in a different way. And then through that, I kind of fell in love with this startup concept. It was really aligned with how I work. And serendipitously met my co-founder, Jayesh, and we jumped in together and started Joni. So very long scenic route.
Yes, I love that though. We just had this conversation in our last episode with Danielle that it's never too late to start a career. And we kind of talked a little bit on that. I feel like in society, sometimes it's kind of that peer pressure of go to high school, go to university, go get married, go have kids. And that, you know, there's just that kind of linear kind of expectation. And really, it's okay to kind of shake it up and change it up. And so I really like our listeners to kind of start to think about that a little bit more of that. Doesn't matter what your age is or who you are, you can really make that shift in your career that you would like if you're feeling like you're not in alignment to where you want to be.
Absolutely. I think the idea of being able to reinvent yourself, kind of like a Shania Twain song, you can, you know, you can choose how you're going to be any day.
Yeah.
But like I went from tech to managed to like consulting to the startup world to then launching my own company. But I worked at call centers and I've done jobs that didn't seem to make any sense, but you're able to pull from everything.
Yeah.
And I think that often we're told and where we get stuck is this idea of like find your passion. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's terrible advice because you can't just find your passion by thinking about it. You find your passion or at least things that you can get inspired by or motivated by doing. It's an action. Yeah. And the more you do, and oftentimes the more you fail, the more you learn about yourself. You tend to not learn very much about yourself if you don't fail. And so if you don't fail, you're not putting yourself into those positions where you're challenging yourself. And so I think we kind of have it a little bit wrong. I think you end up learning where your passion is or learning where you can contribute most in this world or what motivates you the most just by trying, just by doing different things. And you don't have to stick with anything.
I love that. It's true. Like I joke that I'm a hippie because I felt like I could never figure out where I wanted to be. But now looking at where I am today, like I love working with businesses. I love doing the marketing. I love looking at strategy, doing the integration of systems. And I feel like if I would have stuck in maybe one area and not have been the hippie, that I wouldn't have been able to found where I am today and so passionate to kind of keep growing of where I've already started to go, but now realizing, yes, that's where I'm meant to go.
Yeah. And you took a leap, right? I think that's the big thing is like, you're like, I'm going to take a chance on myself. Mm-hmm. I really think I can do this. It's scary. And you do that. The reality is you do that over and over and over again in your career.
Yes.
And like the data shows that if you stay in one place, you typically don't get paid the same amount as if you move around and know what the expectations were before, where you stayed at a company for 20 plus years and that was the norm and it would look terrible on your resume if you jumped around, is now not the case. You know, now if you're with some company for 10, 15 years, people are wondering why you haven't moved.
Yes.
You know, like they're looking for that person who's able to kind of jump in and hit the ground running, but like, you know, drive change, but you're not there forever because you move on.
Yes. I remember at one of my old companies, they would have, like, I don't even like to label people as millennials or Zen. Like, it's probably like my biggest pet peeves and it drives me bananas. Right. But I remember sitting in this boardroom and they're like, oh, they're just millennials. They like to do like just that stereotypical moment. And I'm like, I'm a millennial and I'm sitting here just quiet. And actually in reality, I prefer to stay in like companies, but I like to be given different roles and responsibilities to challenge myself because once I've learned it, I'm done it, I'm bored again now. Like it's my ADHD. I've now learned that I need that dopamine hit or else it's because I'm just bored.
and you learn about yourself, right? I think that's the thing too, is as you go on, you learn what you like, you learn what you don't like, you learn what inspires you, what doesn't inspire you, who you want to work with, who you don't necessarily want to work with. And everyone's different. It's interesting. I think every generation says the same thing about the next generation. Like now we're talking about, you know, millennials are now old, right? Now it's Gen Z and it's Gen Alpha. And like, they're the ones that are, and I think each generation brings their own insight into our ways of working. So COVID definitely moved us forward on the remote side of things, but you know, the way that we work and operate, the traditional like 9 to 5, 8 hour work week, 40 hour work week, not to say that I don't work 60 plus hours because I have a startup, that's a different mold though, but like that came from, you know, building cars in a factory when Ford created that. Like that is the model that we're using for a knowledge economy. And it's not necessarily the best way for us to work. And what I think these new generations are teaching us is we can do things differently. And we can be successful when we do things differently. And I really like that approach. I really think it's refreshing. And so I learn a lot from not only like the next generation, but also just challenging myself to work in different ways too, and just not fit that mold. Like the 9-to-5 doesn't work for a lot of people, including women with, you know, and mothers and parents and people with children. That's really, really difficult.
Yeah. And you and I kind of discuss a little bit like on how it is really difficult for mothers. And that's why like I really coined Creative Dynamics is having that flexibility lifestyle, because as a new mom, when I started and I was like, oh, maybe I should go back into tech. Oh, maybe I should go do originally. This is why I was always joke that I'm a hippie. I'm like end up going the event industry thinking, oh, that's a good idea, 'cause I can work in the summertime. But then I was like, oh, now I'm missing out in the summertime, can't do camping, can't do these things, I'm doing events. It's like, what is that happy medium? But that flexibility for parents is really important. And Nadine, who comes in, who's a life coach, she comes in every month on the show. And we kind of talk about that a bit more on, it's not just moms, but parents as a whole, that we as employers need to think of having that more flexibility for the parents. Because it's so stressful, it is. It doesn't matter if you have one kid, two kids, 500 kids, whichever, just having, that's a lot, it escalated.
That's a lot, yeah.
Just having that flexibility helps parents have that bit more peace of mind. So for example, like our daycare, the new daycare, it's on school district time, which I didn't realize when I signed up. I was in a panic trying to find daycare, not realizing that he's out when Rylan is on Prodi days or whichever. I was like, oh, well, I guess that's okay now because I don't put her in anything, but now I'm going to feel stuck. Like I can't, you win some, lose some.
Yeah, it's tough. I remember dropping my girls off in the morning at before school childcare. This was when they were at school. Picking them up after school at after school childcare, going home at like getting home at like 6:37, cooking dinner, putting them to bed, doing it all over again. And it's tough. That's a really tough way to move through life. And not to say that, you know, some people like that routine. For me, it didn't work. I was like, I like to break up my day a bit more. I want to be able to have the flexibility to take my kids to a doctor's appointment without having to ask permission, because I'm trusted enough to be able to get my deliverables done without having to clock time. And I think this idea of clocking time is lazy leadership, lazy management. It shouldn't matter whether it takes me 4 hours or, you know, 2 hours. If you do the job well, then you should have the flexibility to work the way that works best for you.
I love that. It's true. And I feel that I'm hoping the ways of the world that we're still pushing more that direction. I think COVID has helped a little bit for sure. Yeah. Bring us a little bit forward thinking a little bit more there. But there's still a lot of change I think that needs to happen for sure. But at least we're one step.
We're getting there. Yeah, we're getting there. At least remote work isn't like people don't look at you with like you have three heads that you're like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, people get it. People get it now. Yeah.
Yes. I love it. Maybe let's talk a little bit more about Joni, because we briefed it, but yeah, tell all the listeners about Joni and you've briefly said that your storyline led you to Joni, but maybe you can kind of hit of what Joni is, and then the approach of building and scaling Joni of your background.
Yeah. So Joni is a 21st century period care brand. So I often say that because a lot of the products in the industry now haven't changed in 30 plus years. There's been very little innovation, both on the personal side, the products that I use, and the commercial side, the products that we see in bathrooms, in public spaces. And so we launched Joni in 2020. And one of the big realizations I had when my co-founder and I were chatting about this idea of starting a period care brand was that I had menstruated over 300 times in my life at that point. And I resonated more with, you know, my Allbirds, a shoe brand, or a, you know, Yeti water bottle company than I did with any period care brand on the market. And I was like, why? This is like such an intimate experience that roughly 26% of the population has every single month. Mm-hmm. And we are kind of forced to buy these products that have been around forever. We're still being sold, you know, ads with women playing tennis in white shorts. Mm-hmm. We are still seeing like really cheesy empowerment slogans on tampons, like that's going to change our lives. And so I was like, we can do better. And we can do better with the accessibility point. We can do better with the innovation. And we can do better with the sustainability. Because I, as a consumer, want to be able to buy a brand that's good for me. So whether that's organic, you know, more sustainable third-party certifications, but works. So it's not like a toss-up between it, but is also good for the planet and also the communities. So Joanie is an impact brand. We give back 5% of our revenues to nonprofits essentially across Canada to drive menstrual equity forward. And the reason we do that is because one in three women under the age of 25 cannot afford period care. So they live with period poverty. And that means they use socks, rags, cardboard, cut pads in half or thirds just to make them last longer. And this is, you know, a product for a natural bodily function, just like toilet paper. And I often give the this scenario of like, imagine if toilet paper was no longer free. Imagine if we all had to carry a roll of toilet paper around with us everywhere we went. And if we didn't have it, we'd have to buy toilet paper from the dispenser. And then we think about the period care dispensers out there now. They're either broken, empty, or you don't have the right change. And I'm like, we could do a better job. So we have both commercial solutions for individuals online, direct to your house, or retailers like Whole Foods and London Drugs. And then we have commercial solutions. We have our dispensers that have been rolled out to over 4,000 washrooms across Canada. We work with many, many organizations to really drive menstrual equity forward in a bigger way.
I love that. It's funny that you say about the like going to stores, a good chunk of the dispensers never work.
Yes.
Or they're out of stock, or like even with,
or they have the same products. Like they have the same product that have been in the dispensers for over like that
100
that
years
pad in the box has not literally not changed. And like nobody wants to use it. This is like, you know, it feels like an encyclopedia set. So you're like, why can't we do a better job here? It's got so much waste. It's insane to me. Like there's other industries that would never put up with that. But yet in this industry, we're like, oh, just grin and bear it. Just deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that the initiatives and what you've already started. I've been watching your journey since day one. So I know it's significant.
Thanks, Rickman. Yeah.
I know you've been making waves. Are you here, just so the listeners know, can they purchase products here in Canada and the US, or is it Canadian specific?
Yeah. So you can purchase us online in Canada and the US. So we ship to homes across Canada and the US. We are available in about 600 retailers in retail doors in Canada, but we have a very small footprint at the retail level in the US. We have a store locator on our website. So if you want to see if you can buy us in the US, I would suggest going there. But we're growing. We're definitely growing, and we'll be moving into the US market in a bigger way next year.
I'm so excited for you. Because you also was it just London Drugs that you got into? I get confused.
Whole Foods was, Whole Foods took us 3 years to get into. I'm a brand nut. So, and I love Whole Foods. I love the Whole Foods experience. I love just like walking around, looking at all the packaging and like seeing how everyone's doing things. And Whole Foods was always like that one retailer for us. There's only, I think, like 12 locations across Canada. I should know this, but I think there's about that. So there's not like huge volumes in terms of stores, but it's just so well aligned. For us. So I was always visualizing Joanie on the shelves, but it took us 3 years. It took us two years of no's until finally they said yes. So now we're on there. It's doing great. And you can find our full lineup at the Whole Foods across Canada.
That's amazing. And for anyone listening, never take no for really the answer. Just keep being persistent. Because I find like when you're building a business, you're going to get so many no's. And it's just having, if you have that passion and drive to move forward, you just need that one yes to get your foot in and start building that extra momentum.
Yeah, it's really hard to do. You hear so many no's as a business owner, the startup world. And you're also convincing people of an idea that they don't they might not believe in, they may not see, they might not understand. And so I've learned a lot about how I frame it and can help me and how sharing a personal journey really helps in the sales process too. So it's not just about the products. I've learned a lot.
You learn as you go. I find a lot, there's a lot of competition out there, especially for females, I believe, women in business. And I'm all about let's collaborate than compete, because I think there's room for everybody to grow. And if we have that mindset, it's just, we need to really switch it as a collective, or else we're just going to be building that negative environment. And I'm not about negative environment. It's all about the energy that you put out there, and we're all going to be able to cultivate what our passion is.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a abundancy mindset, right? Versus a scarcity mindset. So a scarcity mindset is there's this much of the pie, and if they take that much, there's less for me. An abundant mindset is not that mentality. It's that if I win and I bring you with me, then it's a bigger impact.
Yes.
Especially in the period care space. There's a lot of new startups that have started in Canada. And I think it's awesome. I think from a business standpoint, it just validates the need for more options in this category. Women now lead the world economy in spending. They hold this spending power globally. And so it just goes to show you that we're going to see more and more options pop up, because we haven't been provided for in the same way. Before, we were always an afterthought, make razors and then make them pink for women. It's the dynamic has changed. So for us, it's worked really well when we collaborate with our competitors. But we think of it as we're doing better for the industry as a whole. And that means a bigger chunk of pie for everyone.
Exactly. Like the virtual assistant world is so competitive. And
yeah, I imagine.
I'm all about let's work together as two separate companies to, if we have the same kind of vision of woman empowerment, then that still should be our collective coming together and put on an event that supports women in business, or let's do X, Y, and Z. Like I'm always trying to like challenge how we can come together and support each other. But I find like, it's just like any other industry too. Some people are just like, no competition, let's not. And it's like, well, really, we should let the people choose too who they want to work with.
Yeah, exactly. There's different reasons why. And, you have differentiating points, and that will help people decide. And I think it's a mindset that a lot of people struggle with, but also a lot of people are doing really well with the collaboration piece. So I lean into like, wow, that's amazing. When I see a collaboration piece of what would be two competitors, I'm like, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I love seeing them come together. I think it just helps move our mindset a bit more towards the collaboration piece than competitive. I remember when I was in university, when we had to create a list for marketing, and marketing's like, what's your niche? What's your target? Your competitors. I'm like, I have no competitors. They're like, that's just a weird way of thinking it.
Yes, you always have some level. I mean, for us, we got together with our competitors and we advocated in Ottawa together. Amazing. And that's like a perfect example of if one of us went and we didn't collaborate, it wouldn't be as impactful. But we came together as a coalition and said, hey, listen, we're all female-led founders in this femtech period care space, and we're asking you for X, Y, and Z. And they coming together as a group, we got way more traction than if we had just gone on our own. And that's just one example of how it makes sense to collaborate. So I'm always up for it.
I love that. I love that. As a woman in business, can you tell any of the listeners what kind of challenges you faced along the way?
Yeah, actually, just chatting with my team, I went on a bit of a rant this morning because we've had a few times where we've had, like, we've raised funding. Mm-hmm. We've struggled with that. I mean, the statistics are not working. Like, it shows, like, it's not easy to do in general. But as a female founder, my co-founder is a person of color. And there's a lot of barriers in the space for that. Less than 2% of VC funding goes to women-led startups. But I, you know, have a, you know, an optimistic mindset. So we're out there raising, and sometimes we would get these terms where I'm like, do they think I just don't understand anything? Like, these terms are almost predatorial. Mm. And like, I would be giving away a lot of my business. Yeah. If I had moved in that direction. The other thing I find is banking. Banking is built on a very antiquated, inequitable algorithm. I mean, it wasn't until the late 80s when women can actually take out loans on their own without their husbands co-signing. So like, talking about an algorithm that still exists, and they're trying to make it work for this modern world where we're trying to be more equitable. And so one example is, like, I wanted to take out a line of credit without a personal guarantee. Mm-hmm. And when I'm on a Slack group with other founders, and I asked a lot of the male founders, I'm like, what, like, do you personally guarantee it? And I would say most of them were like, no. And then I asked the female founders, and they're like, yes. And so then I was like, okay, that's interesting. And one of the male founders reached out and was like, listen, this is what I do. I'm a CEO of my company. And I walk into a bank as a CEO, not as the owner, because if I got hit by a car and they had to hire another CEO, that CEO is not going to personally guarantee this loan. But as an owner, they see you as a small company, and so they treat you differently. And, like, literally, that is how I went in. We got ghosted from a couple banks. That's another story. But I went into another, and we got our line of credit without a personal guarantee. Hmm. And we really had to push for it. But it was that mindset. And me walking in with and that tip, I'm like, I think those are a lot of female founders experience. Mm-hmm. Trouble getting loans, potentially trouble being kept, like, taken seriously, trouble, like, understanding that this is an opportunity, not a niche market. So mm-hmm. there's a variety of things. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you give any kind of tips for any women potential founders kind of going in this realm, of what they can even do to have that mindset?
I mean, I think a lot of it is understanding your worth mm-hmm. and your value, and being unapologetic about it. So, for example, with banking, I wasn't willing to negotiate that point. That was really important for me. And I came out with these conversations, like, this is what I'm looking for, and this is the partner that I need, and this is why I need it, and this is what I'm building with it. So I made it very, very clear. I think that often we, you know, you talk about imposter syndrome, and we just second guess ourselves. And I think that the idea of dreaming big and going for it is a really important piece. And you just, and a lot of that is just believing in yourself. And that comes with a lot of lessons. You know, there's many times where I'm like, who the hell am I to be doing this? What am I thinking? But I look at the bigger mission of what we're trying to do, and I'm like, if not me, then who?
Yeah.
And why can't I be the one driving this forward? And so I think surround yourself with amazing people who cheer you on. Exactly. That's a big one. It can be a really lonely road.
Yes.
And like, when you're kind of in the valleys and the dark places, and you're just like, how am I going to either make it another day? You know, you're down, in mental health is a big play for a lot of founders. Having that circle around you that you can reach out to is game changing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing that. And I feel like right now with the market, there's so many business owners too, not within your industry, but as service-based businesses and food restaurants, we're seeing close left, right, and center right now. I think it's a real hard time for everybody as the economy as a whole. And so building those foundational pieces to have that community is really important. I know for me, I'm still trying to build those community pieces up. It's taken almost 5 years to finally find like, okay, I feel safe here. Feel like I can speak my mind. Know that I'm not being judged. I can go over here with my best friends and know that they'll pick me up when I'm feeling down or like get me out of the house, because unfortunately we are in hard times right now. And so making sure that you've built that kind of support around you will help you really move forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's so important.
Mm-hmm. We're already at 30 minutes in. So I'm just going to let, for those anyone listening, you're listening to Breaking Norms, Building Dreams. We are on the United Public Radio Network, UFO Paranormal Radio Network, 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. Let's see here. Oh, and here's a comment. And knowing it's temporary and staying positive, 100%. I find too, sometimes you can get in that negative headspace and trying to get out of it can be very hard. But seeing some light at the end of the tunnel and reminding yourself those positive affirmations will help you. And what your biggest dream is too, like you mentioned, like if you're not going to do it, then who will? And so those are like important things that I consider too when I'm building certain things in business of, okay, it's also too like being a thought leader. How do you want to show up as a thought leader and make that impact and change the world that sometimes is a little broken?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's important to know that it's not always going to be like happiness and, you know, the positive, it's not always going to be that way. I read whether it was another podcast or something, and they talked about building, when you're building big things, when you're pushing boundaries, when you're outside your comfort zone, which is often where you are when you're building anything, if you're starting a business and part of a company that's doing big things, mm-hmm. You know, a third of the time you're kind of going to be in those dark valleys. You're going to be in those shitty places. They go, it's tough. You're doing tough things. Mm-hmm. And then another third of the time, you're going to be somewhere in the middle. You're going to be, it's not bad. It's not great. You're just kind of doing your thing. You're kind of there. And then a third of the time, you're going to be elated. You're going to be in those like, oh my gosh, look what we've done, in those wind zones. And you have to understand that that's kind of where, if you're in that range, then they said you're doing well. And I'm like, that's really refreshing, because the idea of that we're always need to be happy or in that like positive light, never going to happen. But we shouldn't always be in that negative health space. So it's like, as long as we're fluctuating through the thirds, and we're doing well.
Awesome. I'll note that.
Yeah.
Maybe you can just, because we kind of talked a little bit about the product and how you're organic, maybe you can share a little bit more about Joni and how the pieces are built a little bit more, so anyone can understand. But you don't have to go full into the ingredients, but just for anybody kind of listening of like, oh yes, I've been looking for products like that, that's different than anybody else.
Yeah. So our pads are made with bamboo, and we chose bamboo because bamboo is a great resource. It doesn't take as much water to produce as cotton. And we work with third party certified closed loop systems. So all of the water that's used to produce it is all recycled and reused. It's not thrown away. And bamboo is naturally antimicrobial. So nothing, bacteria doesn't grow and it doesn't die. So it's a completely neutral environment. Cotton is not a neutral environment. So if bacteria grows, it can live in that environment. Mm-hmm. Way that is important is because when you're talking about a very sensitive area, you want to be able to have breathability and absorption, and you want a neutral environment so that you don't get those rashes, that irritation. Mm-hmm. So what we often hear with Joni, and this is why we call it game-changing period care, is because we often get people who are like, oh, I don't use pads. Pads always give me a rash. And so I had one person, actually I was in Toronto, and I often give out samples, and this woman, lovely lady, was in, she was cleaning, like coming in to clean the hotel room I was staying at. And I asked her, like, would you like some samples? And she's like, oh, I don't really use pads. This is why. She would get rashes. So I gave her some, and she's like, just, if you want to try it, you know, here, or give it, she had daughters, so she's going to give it to them. I was there for 3 days. And on the last day I was leaving to go to the elevator to check out. She comes running down the hallway and she's like, she has tears in her eyes. She's like, I just have to tell you, I got my period yesterday. I've been using the pads and I have not gotten a rash. This is the first time in like 10 years that I've been able to use pads. Mm-hmm. And it just gives her another option. And I actually took a photo, gave her a big hug. And that's just a perfect example of, like, for me, period care should be about choice, about bodily agency, using what works best for you. And so our pads just give you that option without the extra irritation or the chemicals or the fragrances or anything that's going to irritate you. Mm-hmm. And then our tampons, it's getting over cold. Our tampons are 100% organic cotton. So with tampons, you can't, bamboo would be great, but bamboo is super absorbent. And you don't want super absorbent when it comes to tampons, because you want, TSS comes with absorbency, yes. Toxic shock syndrome. So 100% organic cotton tampons. And we really build a lot of education around non-applicator tampons, which are also called digital tampons.
Okay.
Digit meaning your finger digit, not yeah. like a digital digit.
Yeah.
And so our tampons are non-applicator, so there's a lot less waste. And so those are making them more available in Canada. For whatever reason, non-applicator tampons were not very readily available. So those are our two consumer products, but we also have the most innovative dispensers globally. We have commercial dispensers that dispense product without any unnecessary packaging. So it's just the pad and the tampon. We are the only dispenser in North America that can dispense non-applicator tampons, which reduces waste for an organization and keeps costs down. And our dispensers provide facilities teams with the ability to see which dispensers need to be refilled, which goes back to our mission of making period care accessible to everyone and not having empty dispensers. And so both our commercial and our consumer products make this turnkey solution for a lot of organizations.
I love that. And I didn't know that about bamboo, by the way. Mm-hmm. Learn something new every day.
Well, I often talk, like, people, like, you have like you have pajamas that are bamboo. There's a lot of t-shirts mm-hmm. you can get are bamboo, sheets that are bamboo. And they're like the softest, most amazing, like, yeah. materials. And so that's essentially like what our pads are. They're just incredibly soft.
That's amazing. And I'm so happy for that lady to find like a product that fit well for her as well. And that's the thing, is that we as consumers should be accessible and have the option to choose what is right for us. Because just like, if you can think of food, I might be allergic to dairy. So it's nice to go and have those options that I can at least go enjoy cereal or whichever, something in my coffee as a replacement. But with any kind of the product lines for periods, it's really limited. Like, for example, Always, like, I've always known them, like, and it's mm-hmm. just kind of like time clocked in, though. It's like I've known them for like 100 years, ever since I've mm-hmm. ever had my period. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind yeah. of like, it's just like natural place to kind of consider when you're just like going out to the store. So it's nice to have more options that are accessible to us.
Yeah, exactly. And accessible meaning the price point isn't like so much higher than a conventional brand. Our wrappers are compostable. You can put them in the the compost. They're BPI certified compostable. So from, you know, if you're at home and you want to put this in your home compost, you can. Mm-hmm. And also a big part of our values is this idea of bodily agency. So mm-hmm. when it comes to period care, there's typically a hierarchy. So mm-hmm. at the top are like cup users, and then you've got like tampon users, then you got pad users. And you know, cup users are, it's great, but not everyone can use a cup. Our bodies are different, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I'm traveling, I don't necessarily want to use a cup. Yes. Sometimes I want to use a tampon or a pad. And so what we're trying to do is say, it's not an either or. If you use a cup, it doesn't mean you can't use anything else. you're building a solution for yourself every month. Some months I really want to use pads. Some months I want to use my reusable underwear, which we're coming out with, by the way, later this year. That's sometimes, nice. You know, yeah, sometimes I want to use a tampon if I'm going swimming and I'm training. Like, it just, you get to choose what works for you unapologetically, because this is your body. So we're just trying to make the most innovative, sustainable options for people who menstruate.
I love that. For the underwear, do you get it kind of produced here in Canada? Whereabouts are you getting them made?
So we get asked that question often. And the unfortunate thing with manufacturing in Canada is that it takes a lot of capital to do. And there's the investment climate in Canada is very risk adverse.
Yeah.
Our raw materials are not here, so we'd have to bring them over from overseas, which adds another carbon footprint.
Yeah.
And then people are not willing to pay $50, $60 for either, like we often get if our pads or tampons are manufactured here, and that would increase the cost significantly.
Yeah.
And so we manufacture overseas, and we have really great partners. For example, our tampon partner has been in business for over 100 years. Oh. So they have been creating these incredible, very sustainable products for over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a really, really close relationship. I've been to the manufacturing facility in Europe. I've chatted with our partners. So we have a very close relationship with them. We are looking at how we could bring components that make sense of our manufacturing to Canada. So for example, our dispensers, we're looking to see, can we produce the final components of our dispensers here in Canada. I would love that, but it's just a bit of a longer term strategy for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I love that. But that's something just so everyone is aware of. Like the cost here in Canada I've met other companies, consumers. She's no actually longer in business anymore because she was trying to make it built here in Canada, but the extra price tag and then having to leverage things up and the return on profit too. Like you have to look at it as a business as a whole. It's not that you want to sustain within Canada. Sometimes, unfortunately, we just can't. And with those particular pieces.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we actually don't have any pad and tampon manufacturing capabilities in Canada at all.
Mm, okay.
There's zero pad and tampon manufacturing being done in Canada. There used to be, but they pulled out because the price point couldn't get low enough. There is some in the US, but it's not necessarily organic as far as I'm aware. So the majority of the organic manufacturing is being done overseas.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. For menstrual equality, what is your, if you're thinking in 10 years from now, let's say that, what would you like to see?
Well, I actually state that I believe menstrual equity is possible in Canada in the next 5 years.
Yes.
And we're seeing movements in that direction happening now. So as of December 15th, 2024, all federally regulated organizations have to provide their workers with free pads and tampons. Mm-hmm. That's banks, airports. There's a whole list of federally regulated organizations. Provincially, that's moving forward in each province.
Mm-hmm.
BC is kind of leading the way in that in many ways with our period poverty committee that's being driven by Nikki Hill. She's a huge advocate in this space, but the provincial government is looking at how do we make bigger strides in menstrual equity in our province.
Mm-hmm.
And private organizations across Canada are seeing the value in bringing in period care. So 87% of people who menstruate get caught off guard.
Mm-hmm.
37% of them will miss out on school and work to go find a solution. That's lost productivity. This is happening to your team. So by bringing in period care, you're supporting your team and making a statement that equitable workplaces are important to you. So for organizations that have, you know, UN sustainability goals or DEI initiatives, this is a no-brainer for them. So I strongly believe that period care will be accessible just like toilet paper in the majority of places that you go to. And so there won't be a scarcity issue in Canada. And we've seen that happen in other countries. Ireland has moved forward with it in great ways. And what Ireland did, which I think was really, really cool, is they moved forward with it and then worked with a lot of their local startups in the country to drive that forward. So as a Canadian startup, I really want to be able to see that happen in Canada as well.
That's amazing. I didn't even know that. That's awesome. Yes. And let's make that happen. It's needed.
There's no reason not. Yeah. It's possible. It's easy to do. And for the most part, we've seen such incredible support with the organizational partners that we work with moving in this direction. There's very little resistance. As soon as they're aware, oh, like, of course, like, why wouldn't we do this? Then it's just a matter of, okay, how do we get this rolled out? And we're totally there to support them and make that happen.
I really love that. And I feel like as a woman, when I would go work in a general 9-to-5 and just going into the office and be like, oh no, like, what do I do now? Like, this is awkward. Like,
yes. Or like the fact that you have to hide your tampon while you go to the washroom.
Yes.
Or, you know, like those kind of things. I'm like, can we just get away from that? Like, we don't have to get in the history of feminine hygiene, but the word feminine hygiene is a euphemism. It's a made up word that marketers created in the late 1800s to get around what's called the Comstock Act, which prevented anyone from talking about reproductive health, contraception, including menstruation at the time. That was around for 90 years.
That's crazy.
So you could see how our mindsets around like menstruation have been changed through marketing, through this idea of feminine hygiene. That was the first time that hygiene was even, like, menstruation and hygiene were even connected.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of shame and stigma that came out on ads at the time, talking about like women can protect their dainty feminine allure was mm-hmm. through feminine hygiene. Like, these were words that we got used to. And even into the 80s and 90s, we're still seeing ads about how, like, it's shameful if you're not, like, looking after yourself. So mm-hmm. I think that it's really important that we change our mindsets around menstruation and look at it as a very natural and normal part of life for both people who menstruate and non-menstruators. And so by bringing these conversations into the light, by showing products in our washrooms, yeah. that's what's going to change the narrative in this space. And so we're just going to embrace menstruation as a natural, normal thing because it's how we all got here.
Exactly. 100%. And just like even thinking like when I was in like high school or anything like that, like even like it's probably taken me till after kids going to the store and being like, oh, I have to buy tampons and pads. Like, this is embarrassing. Just throw it in there and maybe buy a few things to cover it up. Kind of like, that's how I used to think. And it's taken like such a long time to be like, no, just need to go in to get some tampons.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
there's a report that came out by Women and Gender Equity Canada in 2023. And in that report, they showed, they gathered data around how Canadians felt around menstruation. Mm-hmm. And the data showed that 1 in 4 Canadians claimed that periods were dirty and unclean. And then 22% of Canadians claim that menstruation should not be publicly discussed and products should be kept out of sight. And I'm like, are we living in like the 19th century still? Like, this is ridiculous. I'm like, I'm walking around trade shows with pads and tampons, like, get over it.
You get one. And
totally. Yeah, you get one. You get a pad. You get a tampon. Yeah. It's time.
So I think it's too, like, maybe to how you're kind of like brought up as well and how maybe it was presented. So it's just kind of like the little bit of like the scarcity piece could be how you're raised in some kind of capacity as well, or how that was brought forward or educated to you. So I think it comes, because I know we have kiddos, so it's just nice to kind of have like kind of that back in the brain of like, okay, it's not a scary thing to talk about. Let's be open about it. Let's go down the aisle and you can wave it in the air, whichever.
Yeah, it's totally normal. We have pads. I mean, we're obviously, you know, I'm the founder of a period care brand. So we have pads on our toilet so that whenever one comes to visit, they see it, it's available. My girls have it in their backpacks. Their friends will be like, oh, I need a pad. I'm out. They'll give it to them. We provide it to their schools. But you're right. Like, how you're brought up does play a role. I mean, my mom's from Mexico. I grew up in Mexico. you know, there's a lot of stigma around tampons as an example, and like how that, you know, relates to your virginity. And so you want to make sure you use the smallest tampon, and that's still a reality for many. Yes. And I think the important part of menstrual equity, not only access to products, but it's education mm-hmm. around your menstrual cycle and what's best for your body, and like facts and what's true and not true versus, you know, the narrative that we've been fed for a very long time.
Yeah. Yes. I'm just looking at the time. We're almost at time. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips for any entrepreneurs who are also parents, how you balance it all?
I mean, I'm married to a very, you know, a feminist man and a very progressive man. So we share everything. And I think that there's no such thing as 50-50. He just brought me lunch while, you know, because he knew I needed to eat. And I've been down here on this call. And so we share things equally. I think like life partners are really, really important. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, an important piece. I don't know. I don't really talk about balance. I think you kind of do what you have to do. I think one of the most efficient people I know are parents, because mm-hmm. they have to balance, you know, their kids and their work. Mm-hmm. I'm learning to find better boundaries. I love to work. I love what I do. Mm-hmm. I see the impact in what I do. So I put a lot of hours in. And my girls are teaching me like, hey, mom, pull back. Like, this is what I need from you. And I'm listening, right? And my husband says the same thing. So I think it's important to listen to family. Family is an important value of mine. Mm-hmm. And I think it looks different for everyone. So like what works for me is we have a family movie night on Friday. That is like my non-negotiable. If I'm in town, I will spend that time with them. They can bring friends over, but I'm there and I'm showing up. And so like what works best for you? And that looks different mm-hmm. for everyone.
I love that. It's so true, because just like no business and how it's built is the same. It's mm-hmm. all unique. So just like family, it's all unique. And so having that general, what that looks like, you're really going to have to kind of mold what works for you as a family, as a whole.
Yeah. And I think it's important that we ask men this question too. Like, how are you balancing kids and work? Right. Because oftentimes women get this question, but I'm like, this is a question for everyone.
It's true.
But oftentimes it's always the women that get asked, like, how do you balance family and work? I'm like, well, this is my husband and I believe that this is how we get it, how we make it work. Yeah.
Yes. It's so, I know like my husband downstairs probably already made me lunch, for example. And it's just, yeah, it's just once we've created that communication path as a whole, it's just, you know, where to step in, where the other steps in, but also having that communication too along the way as things change.
Absolutely. And I mean, startup life is, and running a business, everyone is a part of it in your family. Like it's really hard to have hard lines between family and work. So it's really important that there's that open communication. And I brought my kids to a work event last week, and, you know, I'm really trying to get them involved because I think it's a good opportunity for them. My girls are 14 and 12 to start early. Like I put myself out there. They saw me do a TEDx pitch and I didn't get it, and that's okay. And they were part of that, and they saw how I dealt through the rejection, but also put myself out there. And my hope is that I could be an example by doing and showing them how I'm not perfect. I'm perfectly imperfect, but we can move forward with that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. We're pretty much at time. Is there any last?
God, that was fast.
I know, everyone's like, that was so fast. I was so stressed out. I hopefully made it fun for everybody. any last thoughts for anybody listening? Maybe just touch again on Joni. I have the website on the banner right now for everybody listening, watching, to come to the website to learn more. Neela?
Yeah, I mean, we're big. I would love for them to, you know, reach out on socials, get_Joni at most of the socials, Facebook, mm-hmm. Instagram. We're mostly active on Instagram, but, you know, comment on things you want to see. And we got a lot of product information there, but a lot of our story as well. And then our website is getjoni.com. We're actually just launching a new website in a couple weeks, which I'm really excited about. because it tells our bigger story. So check us out there and say hi. I'm on LinkedIn as well, Linda Biggs, if you find me there, and I'm always engaged with folks, and I love to share people's stories. So if you have a period care story, reach out. We'd love to share it.
Love that. Well, thank you, Linda. Thank you to all our listeners, those within comments, to the United Public Radio Network and the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. Next week, please come in and chat with us and listen to Megan. We're talking about real estate investment and more business development. So with that, until next week, please remember your journey is unique and your worth is unquestionable. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.